Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. My name is James Henderson, and I'm chairman of the GAS programme and director of the Energy Transition Initiative at the Institute. I'm joined today by Mahua Mukherjee, who's a senior research fellow at OIES, to discuss the key messages that came up from her paper, India's Mass Market Clean Mobility Initiatives and its Unique Customized Business Models for Light Electric Vehicles, that was published by the Institute in mid-May 2022. Just to date stamp this podcast in this ever-changing world, we're recording on the 24th of May. Mahua, welcome to the OIES podcast series.
Thanks, James. Very nice to be here.
Well, look, let's get straight on with some questions about your very interesting paper. There's lots of action underway across the whole Indian e-mobility market, and the Indian government's providing lots of support to the electric mobility sector overall. So perhaps we could start by talking about the budget end of the EV market in India. Also, do you think that the e-mobility revolution in India is going to be more inclusive than it is in other countries?
I'm really glad you asked me that. Yes, India is actually quite unusual in starting off its e-mobility incentives with an emphasis on budget vehicles. These are used by low-income people. As you know, the first challenge is that electric vehicles, just like rooftop solar systems, are retail clean technologies, and therefore they're bottom-up in some sense. The electric vehicle revolution is only going to catch on when large enough numbers of consumers decide that these technologies are worth paying for out of pocket, and consumers decide that they offer good value despite their higher upfront costs than the fossil fuel alternative. It's quite a different proposition compared to a more top-down, large-scale investment in a solar park or a wind farm that'll have one guaranteed off-taker, which is an electric utility, usually with a government guarantee. There's no retail consumer decision-making involved in a large wind farm investment. It's all business-to-business contracts. So if governments and EV manufacturers really want to see these one-at-a-time retail consumer investments in electric vehicles go mainstream fast enough to make a measurable dent in overall greenhouse gas emissions, especially in a huge and complex market like in India, then they really need to do lots of homework to understand the low-income consumer and how to create a value proposition for them around a zero-emission transport solution. So once they understand the consumer, they can come up with the right business models that'll kickstart the market and make the electric vehicle technology affordable and attractive, particularly to the largest group of low-income consumers.
So could you just give us an example of that? What does understanding the consumer mean concretely?
Sure, I can give you some examples. First, we need to remember that out of the 230 million vehicles that were moving on India's roads in 2016, fully 86% of them were motorized two-wheelers. So first of all, we need a mindset change when we are talking about the EV market in countries like India or other developing countries. We are not talking primarily about electric passenger cars, like in Norway or the US or the rest of Europe. The Indian government needs to start by supporting electrification of the kinds of light and affordable vehicles that close to a billion people are using in India, rather than starting with the far fewer passenger cars that maybe only 20 or 30 million people are using. The internal combustion engine, or ICE, or ICE vehicle market, is dominated by two-wheelers. And there are also three-wheelers that are called tuk-tuks in Southeast Asia. So these three-wheelers are used as commercial, hired transport by many people who don't have their own vehicles. Three-wheelers can transport passengers as well as cargo. The big challenge that the government of India is facing is how to get enough of these two- and three-wheelers to be battery-operated. And they also have to be affordable to the mass market segment, because obviously, lithium-ion batteries are still too expensive to be affordable to low-income people.
Okay, it's interesting you say that. So practically, how is that going to happen?
This is where I was referring to the need to understand the different consumer segments in the target market for budget two- and three-wheeler vehicles. Let's divide the customers into those who are looking for a two-wheeler for personal use, like driving to the office or university or place of work, and they maybe cover a distance of up to 30 or 40 kilometers a day. Then we have the other group that needs the two-wheeler or three-wheeler vehicle to earn a living, such as gig workers or delivery partners for e-commerce companies or those who do meal deliveries. They drive around 100 to 200 kilometers a day, and they get paid a daily wage based on hours worked and number of trips. So if the government has to prioritize and it wants to offer subsidies in order to maximize the actual usage of electric vehicles, or in other words, maximize the number of clean kilometers traveled, rather than simply focusing on number of vehicles sold, then it's best to start with the delivery drivers. These are the guys who drive the highest numbers of kilometers a day. So we have to see how to change those vehicle choices from petrol or diesel to battery powered ones.
Okay, so I think there's one obvious issue though with these delivery drivers and EVs, and that's that electric vehicles take a long time to charge. So can a delivery driver wait while his vehicle's charging? Surely the gig workers can't afford to wait for an hour or two for an electric vehicle to charge while they're on the clock, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this is where the electric vehicle manufacturers in India have shown a bit of genius with something called the battery as a service, or the leased battery business model. You're absolutely right. The delivery drivers can't and won't wait a couple of hours for the two- or three-wheeler battery to charge. So the EV manufacturers, the electric vehicle manufacturers, have started to build two-wheelers and three-wheelers with a cavity from which you can manually lift out the battery. The very basic lithium-ion battery with only about 50 kilometers of range is about the size of a shoebox and weighs around 7 kilograms. When your mobile app tells you that your battery charge is running low, you go to a so-called swapping station and hand over your spent battery to someone. They hand you a fully charged battery that you just drop into the battery slot in your vehicle, and off you go. Swapping your battery takes a fraction of the time that you would even spend at a petrol station. And the swapping station owner has already taken care of the battery charging for you, so you don't do anything but drive. You spend no time at all waiting for the battery to charge. And when this one runs out, you pop into the nearest charging station and drop it off again and take another fully charged one from there. This is done on a subscription model. So you basically pay a monthly subscription fee that entitles you to pick up a certain number of batteries in a month. It takes care of two things that delivery drivers don't like. One is the weight, and the other is the responsibility for ownership of the battery, mainly the replacement cost, which would come at the end of 1,000 or 2,000 charging cycles when the warranty is over and when the battery also wears out. So delivery service drivers say the worst thing about electric vehicles for them would be the obligation to spend money on buying a new battery when the warranty runs out. That would dissuade them from EVs, and that's why they don't want ownership of the battery.
In terms of cost, is it more expensive or less expensive to do it this way compared to the usual way of having a built-in non-removable battery that you're supposed to charge on your own as the vehicle owner? Does a leased battery affect the affordability issue we were talking about earlier?
That's a very interesting point. Let me mention here that the government of India has had an electric vehicle subsidy program running since 2015. So the cost of the most basic two-wheeler without a battery, but with a government subsidy, is the equivalent of around $800. So that's what it costs you just to buy the vehicle chassis alone. The battery alone is another $800. So the key takeaway here is that the lithium-ion battery, despite all the cost declines we've seen on the graphs, is still 50% of the cost of the electric two-wheeler. So the affordability issue is that a daily wage earner like a gig worker or delivery driver who makes, say, around $200 a month or about $7 a day may be somehow able to manage to pay the $800 for the body of the vehicle after the government subsidy. But he or she cannot really manage an upfront payment of another $800 for the battery. So, as with other clean technology products and the retail consumer, we see here that they need someone else to buy it. That means the retail consumer can't buy it themselves. They need someone else to buy it and just sell them the service because they can't afford to own the capital part of the clean technology. They have to find a more gradual way of getting access to it by only paying for the clean service part of it. So it's actually easier for the delivery driver to pay a monthly subscription fee of the equivalent of $22 that entitles them to a certain number of battery swaps based on their needs. They will never own the battery outright, and nor do they want to. For this income group, having the possibility to buy the e2-wheeler without the battery by just paying $800 for the vehicle after subsidies and getting to borrow or lease a battery that someone else has purchased and charged is actually the only way they can get access to this product. But the downside is this. After you add up the other battery leasing costs on top of the monthly subscription fee of $22, it's still expensive and a financial stretch for them. Suppose they drive 100 kilometers a day on a battery that has a range of 50 kilometers. So assuming that they will need to collect daily two charged batteries from the swapping station every day of the month for a delivery route of 100 kilometers a day, we've worked out that their monthly battery leasing cost comes to around $87. The details of that are in the paper. So the monthly battery leasing cost of $87 is unfortunately 43% of their monthly income of around $200. So a lot of drivers are certainly doing it because it gives them a livelihood. As you might know, e-commerce is a major employer at the bottom of the urban pyramid right now in India, after so many lower-level white-collar jobs were lost overnight due to the pandemic and the lockdowns. But it means that they have to make a lot of other sacrifices with the remaining $113 of their $200 income per month after they've spent $87 on the battery. This is particularly difficult, especially if they're the only earner in the family.
Okay, I mean, that's interesting. I guess I've one other question on cost, if I may. I mean, how does this relate to a normal ICE two-wheeler? Presumably, in that case, there'd be the cost of buying the normal vehicle and the cost of the petrol, which would also come out of their monthly income. So how does the economics of running an electric two-wheeler or three-wheeler compare with the economics of running a petrol or diesel fired similar two-wheeler?
That's a great question. One piece of context that we need to keep in mind for that is that the Indian government, since 2020, just since the start of the pandemic, has actually put huge amounts of taxes on petrol prices. So the prices at the pump, which began at the time when COVID lockdowns were declared, it started at 69 rupees. Today it's 123 rupees per litre. So the prices have been creeping up due to taxes. The government is doing this because they have to vaccinate 1 billion people twice, and they have other sources of revenue have dried up since industrial activity has gone down. So unlike many other countries which have been busy handing out huge stimulus to people, the Indian government has gone the other way, and they have really more than doubled the price of petrol. So the calculations are looking very different nowadays. Everyone is inquiring about electric vehicles, particularly at the budget end, because petrol is becoming completely unaffordable due to the tax increases since 2020. So the cost now, and the other thing is that there are still a lot of delivery drivers bringing their own ICE vehicle two-wheelers to do gig work, but the employers are reimbursing them for some of the petrol. And that's why the employer, the e-commerce company, is also interested in electric vehicles because of the fuel prices, fossil fuel prices that are completely unaffordable. But in general, people want to not only have their vehicle for their gig work, they also want to drive it on their own time. So they're interested in electric vehicles, and if they have to rent the battery, then they do so.
Okay, well, look, that's the gig worker story, and basically gives us a glimpse into how they're accessing the sort of stripped down electric two-wheeler market without the battery. But what about those other E2-wheeler consumer segments you sort of mentioned, who are not gig workers on a daily wage? What does their affordability situation look like?
And that's really interesting. The emerging lessons from the last 2 years point to quite a few other urban target consumer groups for E2-wheelers, and each of them have amazingly different requirements that turn out to be based broadly on their personal circumstances. These medium income groups, so we looked at the low income groups that were the gig workers, now moving on to the medium income groups, we find that they use electric vehicles for personal mobility, not for commercial or livelihood purposes. So in one group, you have the people who earn perhaps twice as much as the gig workers. So these are sort of medium income, $400 a month sort of people. They can pay $1,600 for the vehicle plus battery. Remember, we said the body of the vehicle was $800 and the battery was $800. So they're able to pay $1,600 and they want to buy the battery. They are not interested, it turns out, in the battery as a service model. These could be, for example, teachers, office workers, or students who use the electric two-wheeler to commute to work or school and back. Their driving distance is probably only about a fifth of the daily distance that's covered by the gig worker, so they don't need to charge their batteries as frequently. That's the first point. But, however, what really comes down to their preference for a battery plus a vehicle is that they are still unlikely to have a dedicated vehicle parking spot at home, this middle-income group. And they don't have access to an outdoor plug point where they can charge their parked vehicle overnight by plugging in a cord. So, interestingly enough, even though they're buying the complete vehicle with the battery and they're owning the battery, this group still also want removable batteries. Why is that, you might ask? Well, they carry the 7-kilo battery, which resembles a shoebox, upstairs. They live in apartment buildings mostly. So they carry it upstairs and they plug the battery into an electrical outlet overnight inside their home. And they carry it back downstairs in the morning and put it into the battery slot. That's how they handle their charging requirement. But the battery has to be still removable for them because they live in an apartment building. They obviously can't take the whole vehicle inside, just the battery. So they own the battery and they look after it carefully through the entire warranty period, which covers about 1,000 to 2,000 charging cycles. But this group does not want any battery swapping and multiple handlers for the battery. It belongs to them and they protect it. And after them, so this was the middle income group. And then you have the still higher income group of urban two-wheeler consumers who want to buy a fancy high-end electric two-wheeler, which comes to a cost of about $2,400 after the subsidy. And this group has a much bigger and more powerful battery with a range of, say, 150 kilometers, as opposed to just 50 kilometers for the basic battery model. So this group of consumers are much more well off, and therefore they're more likely to have a dedicated parking spot in a car park, maybe under their building, which has a plug point for wired charging overnight. So these people also buy the complete vehicle with the battery, but unlike the previous middle income group, these people want the battery to be non-removable with an anti-theft feature that alerts them on their mobile app if anyone's trying to touch the battery. So these guys need a non-removable battery because they do indeed have secure wired charging facilities at home. So to summarize, we have people who want swapping, consisting of mainly gig workers and students who can't pay the extra $800 upfront for the battery in addition to the vehicle. Then we have other people who want removable batteries but no swapping. These consist of commuters with no secure parking facilities. And then we have people who want non-removable batteries with wired plug-in charging arrangements directly on the vehicle because they do have parking facilities with charging arrangements. So that's the market segmentation for you.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, absolutely fascinating how different consumer groups kind of want a different product. So I guess last question for you. You mentioned the government was looking at what else they could do apart from the subsidy program to support increased usage and clean kilometres travelled. Have they started to do anything else yet that you can mention?
Yes, there is a new government initiative that's being developed even as we speak. It was announced in February of this year, 2022, and there's a draft policy on which the government is collecting written comments for another few weeks, actually, from the public, before finalizing its battery swapping policy. So they've got the draft one out and people are invited to write in. This is the government's additional attempt to make budget batteries even more affordable, so the swapped batteries won't eat up 43% of a gig worker's income. So for the budget end of the market, the government is pushing for a so-called standardized and interoperable battery for a wide range of electric vehicle brands. Right now, the battery market is fragmented, and each electric two-wheeler brand or three-wheeler brand has its own battery manufacturer, and they each have their own sets of exclusive swapping station partners. The government now wants to mandate a common battery design for the basic budget end of the market, with standard and interoperable specifications that will increase market entry and will thereby increase the number of potential customers and swapping stations. It'll also increase safety and ease of end-of-life battery recycling by making a large number of batteries traceable and professionally handled by the swapping station operators. So this, together with the existing subsidies to manufacturers of both vehicles and batteries, should make batteries more affordable through economies of scale. This is what we'll be watching out for to see if the plan works. So just in conclusion, I would say India is quite unique among countries that are pushing for budget EV adoptions with a strong focus on the bottom end of the market and inclusivity. And this is really a numbers game. I mean, the majority of people who drive vehicles are at the bottom end of the market. So if you want to see reduced greenhouse gas emissions, you've got to get them to switch to clean transport first. So the manual battery swapping and the battery leasing business model has really helped a lot of additional people already to gain access to EVs by being relieved of both the upfront cost and the obligation to pay for the replacement cost of the lithium-ion battery. But the battery cost needs to fall still further to about half of what it is today in order to be accessible to an even larger segment of the mass market. So the government is doing all it can to make that happen. And they realize that the mass market sort of needs to love e-two-wheelers before we'll see a clean mobility revolution and also a decrease in the country's oil imports and a reduction in air pollution from the transport sector.
I've really enjoyed that conversation and to hearing about the different customer segments and how the kind of Indian government's strategy on electric vehicles is building up, which essentially captures the messages from your paper, which I mentioned earlier is called India's Mass Market Clean Mobility Initiatives and its unique customized business models for light electric vehicles, which you can find on the Institute's website now. So thank you again, Mihua. Thank you also to listeners. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.